And this is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Is that a Christmas song? Is that a Christmas song for the Fast 15 Echo? The kids in Hamburg don't approve. They say, Dory, you're out of season. I know, I'm getting your message loud and clear. Text me at 98973. Welcome to our Fastest 15, a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. And yesterday, I don't know if we talked about it on the air or off, but Nicole, you were asking me, you were making a comparison between, what's that movie, Austin Powers? Is that right?
Yes, Austin Powers, but yes, you mentioned it on air. We were talking about it off air, and then, yeah, you kind of.
I had not actually seen Bezos' rocket until about 5 minutes ago.
I know, you acted like I was like the dirty mind.
That's very weird. Mm-hmm. it's very strangely shaped. I'll grant you that. But we're a step closer to space tourism. I read a bunch of columns this morning. You know, that was just so, we're so critical. Of what's the billionaire space race for? Why are they doing this? Jazz Shaw, who I like very much, and we have on the show every once in a while at hotair.com. Jazz Shaw wrote that even if they make the trip to space 5 or 10 times a year, it can only hold 4 people. So we're talking about 40 people a year out of a planet of 8 billion. We'll get to experience space and all of this. But I don't understand the criticism. First of all, if they can afford it, and this has been their passion since they were kids, then why not? Why not do that? And then also, you know, what was the whole point of George and Orville Wright? I don't know if that's their names even. Wilbur, Orville. What were the Wright brothers? How can I forget that?
Yeah, I think that's right. Mm-hmm, Wilbur.
Which ones? I said George, Wilbur, and Orville. I think it's two of those three. Find the answer.
Hold on. Yeah.
Yeah, hurry. People don't want to listen to a search Google. We're supposed to provide unique, compelling.
It's Orville
content.
And Wilbur. Yeah.
Orville and mm-hmm. Wilbur. Mm-hmm. George.
Yep, there we go.
Oh, I know. I grew up with a kid named George, right? That's right. But no, what was the whole point of them at Kitty Hawk? Why would they do that? And it's led to some pretty amazing changes in the world. Some of them they never could have anticipated. And I don't know where this is going to lead.
Wouldn't you say, though, that, you know, the Wright brothers were trying to get us from one place to another? It's a, you know, form of transportation to for useful purposes for this. You just go up into space, you come back down. It's not as useful necessarily.
I disagree.
I know that it could grow into something.
Of what can happen. I have read that we may have planes in the not too distant future that instead of just flying level at 35,000 feet, they would actually kind of bounce between the whatever the top capability of air flight is. I know there are a lot of Boeing people listening right now who could provide that, but we're essentially bounce off the top of the Earth's atmosphere and then I'm at a amazing speed down. And I did a little bit of that when I did that Air Combat USA. And you do these roller coaster things to gain on an opponent that you're tracking. And so you go up and then you come down super fast. It could cut the time of travel from New York to Seattle by a substantial amount. And all I'm saying is a craft like this might be a step in that direction. I don't know. So I don't know what it's going to come of it. But who cares? They got the money. They've dreamed of it since they were children. I've had a lifetime goals list, and I've done most of the things on it. And apparently Branson and Bezos, this is at the top of their lifetime goals list. Who cares how they spend their money?
Right. I agree.
Bottom line. Okay, so anyway, we do have some sound bites from it, though. And I have to admit, the 82-year-old woman who was on the flight, she was in the astronaut program, but they wouldn't let a woman go into space. Wally Funk, she's adorable, but I'm guessing she's adorable only in kind of small doses. She loved the spotlight this morning when they landed.
I can't tell you. I had such a good instructor. He took us through everything that we were going to do. So when I went up this morning, the noise wasn't quite as bad. and we went right on up, and I saw darkness. I thought I was going to see the world, but we weren't quite high enough. And I felt great. I felt like I was just laying down. I was just laying down, and I was going into space. And I want to thank you, sweetheart, because you made it possible for me. I've been waiting a long time to finally get it up there, and I've done a lot of astronaut training through the world, Russia, America, and I could always beat the guys on what they were doing because I was always stronger, and I've always done everything on my own, and I didn't do dolls. I did outside stuff, and I flew airplanes. I had 19,000 some hours. I loved it, and I loved being here with all of you and your family and the four of us. We had a great time. It was wonderful. True. I want to go again fast.
Ah, she is adorable. She's just flat out adorable. And I will tell you that I have had the opportunity to experience weightlessness. There's an airplane. You know, where they filmed all the stuff for Apollo 13, and they call it the Vomit Comet. And I got to do it. It's called Zero G is the company that operates it. And we were pitching it to our listeners as well. But I got to go, and it goes up, and then it just dives straight down. But that replicates weightlessness. And we were weightless for maybe a minute. But it is a cool feeling when you're just floating in air. But it's and Bezos talked about this. It's not that unusual a feeling. I was really surprised. I thought that it was going to be just mind-blowing, but it seemed very natural to be floating in air when I did that. And he talked about that as well.
On how it felt? Oh, my God! My expectations were high, and they were dramatically exceeded. We were talking about this a little bit in the car ride on the way back, and I don't know, the zero G piece may have been one of the biggest surprises because it felt so normal. It felt so like almost like we were as humans evolved to be in that environment, which I know is impossible, but it felt so serene and peaceful and the floating. It's actually much nicer than being in full one gravity. It's a very pleasurable experience just from the sheer, just the way it feels, the tactileness of it. The most profound piece of it for me was looking out at the Earth and looking at the Earth's atmosphere. Every astronaut, everybody who's been up into space, they say this, that it changes them, and they look at it and they're kind of amazed and awestruck by the Earth and its beauty, but also by its fragility. And I can vouch for that. When I look out, you know, when we're sitting in this room and when we're driving our cars and we're moving around the planet in our normal ways, the atmosphere is so gigantic. You know, we're these tiny little things, and the planet, the atmosphere is so big. But when you get up above it, what you see is it's actually incredibly thin. It's this tiny little fragile thing. And as we move about the planet, we're damaging it. And, you know, so that is, that's a very profound. It's one thing to recognize that intellectually. It's another thing to actually see with your own eyes how fragile it really is. And that was amazing.
I thought that was a very descriptive way of talking about what they did today. So I have no begrudging feelings at all that guys who have accomplished a lot professionally get the opportunity to do stuff that most of us never will. It's good for them. All right. Hey, Sean, can we do a cancel culture update here?
This is your cancel culture update.
Yeah. This one is from a Minnesota state senator who has never been a fan of Asian carp. She likes the fish. She doesn't like the name. It's I guess there are four imported fish species that are called Asian carp, and they're wreaking havoc in the heartland. They're infesting a bunch of rivers, and they're getting into the Great Lakes. But the last straw was when a business association put up a sign that said, "Kill Asian carp." It was well-intentioned, the senator says, But it was off-putting to have the words kill and Asian next to each other. And so they have one approval of a measure requiring that Minnesota agencies no longer call them Asian carp. They will now be called invasive carp. And so, Asian carp, you have been
canceled. This has been a Cancel Culture Update. Now back to your regularly scheduled program.
I got to tell you, though, I still don't know what the rules are. We still call the murder hornets Asian murder hornets, and nobody seems to care about that. Asian flu is racist. Asian carp is racist. Asian murder hornets is fine. And I don't know why. I don't know what the rules are. If somebody could explain them to me at 98973, I would really appreciate it, because I got enough problems. I don't need to be accidentally, you know, offending somebody. Okay, next up in our fastest 15 on the, I've told you for many years about my 40-year collection of Sports Illustrateds. I started getting a subscription to Sports Illustrated when I was 12 years old. And because I think I have some OCD capabilities, I decided I'm going to keep every issue. And it was kind of cute to have a year's worth, but I kept saving every issue for 40 years. And my wife is a saint, because the issues went with me to our first house in Ballard that we bought together. And then the growing collection came with us out to where we live now, in a different house in the same neighborhood. And then we moved a third time. And now it was 40 years worth of Sports Illustrated. And my wife kept buying these little cardboard magazine box holders. And we have shelves and shelves and shelves in the storage room that just hold SIs that I never look at. And so last summer, my wife, and she put up with it long enough, and she said, can we please just cut the collection down? Throw out the ones you're never going to look at. Look at the covers. See if it's a story that is memorable or important to you for some reason. And let's throw out all the rest. And she was right. I thought maybe it was going to be worth something someday, but it's not. I mean, we checked around. It was worthless. And I was never looking at them. And then I thought, well, what if I have a grandson? And I could go and show him these old covers. And he's not going to want to look at magazines. They're all available online. He'll look there probably. So anyway, the highlight of Sports Illustrated, especially when you're 12 to 18, I don't know, it was the swimsuit issue. It was always a big deal. And I remember, I believe, I don't know how old I was. Maybe I was 12 when there was a groundbreaking Cheryl Teagues swimsuit issue, because she was wearing kind of a fishnet swimsuit. And it was horribly exciting for an adolescent boy. And then you had, you know, Kathy Ireland and Elle McPherson, names that I still remember. Anyway, it's different now. It's got to be different, kid, in 2021, as Sports Illustrated, which is a dying magazine. I still got it until, I think, just a year or so ago, and it is dying. I think a Seattle company, if I'm not mistaken, has bought the brand and bought the name, but it's just dying. Anyway, in attempt to temporarily boost things, and man, this got a lot of attention on Twitter. You know, the People magazine and the Today Show, they all talked about how incredible this was, because Sports Illustrated has put a transgender person on the swimsuit issue, on the cover. It's very different to be an adolescent boy in 2021 than when I was an adolescent boy. Okay, I'm not going to comment beyond that. Next up in the fastest 15, a doctor's organization is now recommending that all children wear masks this fall. This is crazy. No child, according to the CDC website, there have been 600 children who have died because of COVID Every one of them had a severe comorbidity. Some of them also had cancer along with COVID. But as far as my research can take me, I cannot find any healthy child who has died from COVID in the last year and a half in America. And yeah, if you have comorbidities, you probably should get vaccinated. If you're if you're my age, you absolutely should. I was looking at stats with this third wave that's hitting Great Britain now. The number of positive cases is not that far off, but the number of deaths is a fraction. So, you know, all these people are getting it, all those Texas Democrat super spreaders got on the plane maskless, which you and I would not be allowed to do, but this was a private charter because they're political royalty. So they all get on maskless, and they're drinking their Miller Lights, and they're flashing peace signs to the camera. They're such renegades because they don't think people should... I mean, they left the state because they don't believe that somebody should show ID when they vote, which is still one of the stupidest political arguments ever, that there are so many Democrats. I mean, it's so naked what they're doing. That means the only reason you wouldn't want people to show ID when they vote is if you want illegal votes. And then people say, well, what if you're elderly, or what if you're 18 and don't have a driver's license yet? You got plenty of other ways that you can show ID of who you are. And but people who want to cheat or want a future filled with cheating don't want people to show ID when they vote. But anyway, so all these Democrats get on the plane. They're super spreaders. Seventh just tested positive. I just heard that in the last hour. They infected a member of Nancy Pelosi's staff. They had to rush Kamala Harris to the hospital after she was exposed to these renegades. She went to tell them how great they were and how they're saving the country by fleeing Texas. And then we have these doctors saying that every kid should be masked starting this fall. And that is insane. We're going to give you another perspective, by the way, right after the top of the hour at 2:05. We're going to talk to a doctors organization that is suing over many of these mask mandates because they say they are hurting more than they are helping. But I'm all for the vaccination if you want it. I said this yesterday. Why do people not understand that you can be for vaccination but against mandatory vaccination? I think it should be an individual's free choice, not a government mandate. It's that simple. I chose to get vaccinated. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You have 15 minutes. We'll give you the world. Coming up next, we didn't have a chance to visit last week. Dave Wyman is coming up here on the Dory Monson Show. Oh, Jefferson's Airplane.
Good
Jefferson
job, Dory.
Starship.
It's Jefferson Airplane, Dave. Okay. Thanks for chiming in, though.
Sorry. I knew it was Jefferson something.
You're just trying to poach my correct guess. How are you, Dave Wyman?
Hey, how are you?
Haven't had you on for a couple of weeks. This is great. I'm very excited about this.
Really? What do you got? What do you got for me?
Nothing. What do you want to talk about?
Who was the... Grace Slick? Was that who this is?
Grace Slick.
Yeah.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Changing the name from Airplane to Starship, and then the... crank out garbage like We Built This City, which is one of the worst songs ever written.
Yeah.
Okay.
They went disco.
Kind of. So, Nicole, who's very avid listener of your show, she consumes everything. She is the most avid talk radio listener that I know of.
Does she listen to the 2 o'clock hour?
No, of course not.
Okay.
Maybe she catches it on the podcast. She told me, because I did not hear this, even though I love your show as well, but she told me that you had a very cool story about your jersey number, and she wanted you to tell it on our show because she found it so fascinating.
Oh, yeah. That's something that's pretty personal to a lot of guys, you know, and you see the guys are changing their numbers this year. But, so I became number 92. I was number 28 in high school for whatever reason, and then I got 92 at Stanford. There's this guy named Jeff Seaman that played linebacker in the NFL for a long time, played for Minnesota. And I guess I was kind of a similar player because I was like, why 92? And they're like, oh, man, this guy was just the best. And so I got 92. And then when I got drafted by the Seahawks, it was open. So I was 92. Mm-hmm. Well, when I went to Denver, there was a guy wearing 92. So I just took 57. And I went out and I had like my best year as a pro. Mm-hmm. And then I changed back to 92 and had nothing but knee surgeries for 2 years. But the reason why I changed back is because my son was born in the off season on April 14th, and it was like 1994. Okay. And so I went back and told him, yeah, I'm going back to 92. And the reason why is because the hospital that he was born in was on 92nd Street. That day in the paper, it was 92 degrees. And when Jake was born, he was 9 pounds, 2 ounces.
No, get out.
Yeah. So I'm like, that's okay, great. That's it. And I don't even care whoever. We were talking to somebody about getting a jersey number. I think it was a player. I can't remember who it was, but he was saying, yeah, he wanted a ridiculous. Oh, I know. It was Cliff Averill. And he wanted to be, he was 92. And when he came here, he went to Brandon Meebane. He goes, yeah, Brandon wanted a ridiculous amount of money. So forget it. I wasn't going to do it. But I don't know how much that must have been. But I did a topic on the air. If you're making $1 million a year, mm-hmm. how much would you pay to get your jersey number? Because I'm thinking, if I make $1 million, $5,000 tops for me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go and pay
that was
like
the exact number that popped in my head. It was 5,000.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these guys, it's so important to them. And like when I went to Denver, I was like, all right, I'll wear 57, whatever. Didn't really matter that much to me. But when I came back and all those things happened, then I definitely wanted it.
But it is obvious how important jersey numbers are to guys like you, because you have your jersey number in your email address. Paul Moyer has his jersey number in his email address, and email came about long after you both had retired.
Yeah.
But that's how important numbers still are to you guys. I understand that. I don't know that I get it, because I've never experienced that level. But it's clear to me how important it is to you guys.
Well, it's funny, mostly football players, right? Because, I mean, can you name, I mean, I know that that Michael Jordan was 23. Can you name baseball players? Like, can you tell me?
Yes.
Like Kyle Seager's number, or
I can tell you that Babe Ruth was number 3. That Lou Gehrig. I mean, famous players.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth. Ruth was 3. Gehrig was 4. Mickey Mantle. You know Mickey Mantle's number?
Oh yeah. No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
No.
You know it because of Seinfeld, not because of baseball.
Oh, 9.
7.
7. 7. 7. Yeah, that's right.
And then my favorite player of all time, Brooks Robinson, was number 5, which is why from the time I was in Little League until just a few years ago when I was playing in a bunch of adult leagues, I was playing in a 40 and over basketball league, I've always worn number 5 because that was mm-hmm. Brooks Robinson's number. And so so even in my low level, my low caliber of performance, I cared about jersey numbers. I don't know why. It's kind of a silly thing, but yeah. Who cares?
Yeah, but I do think it's more important to football players. Like most fans know, that John Elway was number 7 and that Russ is number 3 and, Bobby Wagner's number 54. I think it's more so in football than it is in baseball, I would say.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. I mean, there's no question. And that's because
you got a helmet on. And
exactly. Because you're a little depersonalized with the uniform.
Right.
And so the number becomes a big part of your identity. So,
well, and I love that, too. Like, I could walk out of the kingdom after a game and nobody would know who I was. Because people always thought that I was like, 200 pounds, or was I a receiver maybe? I'm like, no, I'm 245, but
yeah.
I don't know. I just didn't look like a football player. Some guys, look like football players, and, they couldn't walk out of there without getting, swarmed by fans and stuff. But I always loved that. I could just walk out of there, go across the street. I remember I had a date after a game, and I went over there, and I was sitting there talking to my date during the you know, right after the game, and not one person, you know, there's all these Seahawk fans in there and nobody knew who I was. That was before the internet, though.
Right. So. And today you can't walk out of the stadium without somebody yelling, "Hey, Paul Moyer."
Yeah. That's exactly right. Or Dave Craig. Hey. And then, or I'll get this. You're a Seahawk guy. I got that in the, I went to Reno for my reunion for my state championship team, and there was a lady in the bar that was like, "What was I doing in the bar?" But I was getting ready for my flight. So, yeah, she was like, "Hey, you're a football guy, like a Seahawk guy." And so I was like, yeah, I introduced myself to her.
You know why? Why everybody recognizes you now? Because you do so much work on the TV side.
Over on the TV side.
Yeah.
Yeah, you like that.
All right, let me take a quick time out here. And then...
Heads are hanging from the garbage man trees. Mouthwash, jukebox, gasoline.
Can you bring the level up a little?
Pills are pointing at a poor man's pockets. Smiling eyes ripping out of his sockets.
I've never heard this song before in my life.
Got a devil. You might know the artist, think 90s.
Oh, is this Beck?
Beck. Nice job, Dave.
Really?
Yeah, he was a different cat, man. That guy had some very different music.
Oh, yeah. He's still making music. He's still out.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Two turntables and a microphone.
Where it's at. See, I didn't play that song because you probably would have gotten it straight off the bat.
Hey, can I join the conversation, you guys?
Oh,
hey,
Dory's still here.
Yeah, run your show.
Come on.
Go ahead.
Let's take a quick time out here. It's tied 1-1, most importantly, and we'll continue our conversation with Dave Wyman in just a minute here on the Dory Monson Show.
Got a devil's haircut in my
recognize this.
Yeah. Oh, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, good job, Dave.
That was good, Dave.
This is from the Coneheads soundtrack, I believe. A great song.
Nice. All right. Hey, Sean, I'm fully planning on getting the next one, so make sure we play it early and that you have a tiebreaker ready to go. Okay?
You got it, boss.
Thank you.
Plans change.
A couple of things, Dave. You are one of the well-adjusted people that I know. But you've told me that it was tough transitioning from your playing days to civilian life. And you know, after this whole thing went down with Richard Sherman last week, three of the four members of the famed Legion of Boom have had legal problems. And is there something about the transition that's tough for these guys? Is there something about the ferocity that you need on a football field and how it just doesn't translate into real life? What do you think's going on there?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, it was just, I just had an empty, lonely feeling, you know, for a couple of years where I just was like, man, how can the game go on without me? The thing was with Sherm, though, you know, and we talked about it all last week, and I know you guys did too, he still has a chance to play. So it's not like he's out. But, you know, we were talking about, and I had a few people text in on our show about the military guys, too. It's like, once you're out, like, you have full access. You know, you can get through the gate, and you're with a bunch of guys, and you are, you know, you have the status to be, you're part of something. And then all of a sudden, you're an outsider, you know, and that's kind of the same thing. I remember my first time working for the Seahawks doing media, I had to walk around the field with all the media members,
yeah,
you know,
right,
and you have to wear the media badge and everything. It's like, hey, man, I was roaming this place, you know, it was, yeah, so that, but I can't really explain that. There was also Jeremy Lane, too. He got in some trouble, not anything too serious.
Yeah.
I think he was the one that got pulled over and said, I'm not so much drunk as high.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. But no, it's hard to figure because, you know, and Cam Chancellor is, you know, the only guy really of that group that, well, and Byron Maxwell, I guess, you know, he's a good guy and everything, or hasn't had any problems is what I should say. So, but yeah, I mean, the stuff with the other guys, it's kind of disturbing. I don't know what that's about, but, you know, I'm with Grosby and, you know, Dave Grosby, and Gros said, look, you know, if you get depression or anxiety or whatever is causing this. It doesn't care if you graduated from Stanford and were drafted in the fifth round and a great story and a guy that had so much success and made so much money in Richard Sherman. So, yeah, I kind of, you know, the way he left here, I think a lot of people didn't, you know, weren't super happy with him, the way he exited here in Seattle. But, you know, I think for the most part, we got a lot of support and love for him, hoping that he's going to be okay.
Yeah, get the help that he needs.
Yeah.
All right. A guy I remember that you really liked when he was with the Seahawks, Cassius Marsh. Did you hear this thing from him last week?
Yeah, they treat players like crap in New England.
Yeah, here.
They also treat players like crap. You know, they don't, you don't have like you don't have a lunch, period.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, so they're just like, just eat you on your own?
Yeah, like you get there and you have to make time to eat in between meetings. And they're like 5 to 10 minute periods where I would literally go scoop food and put it in a cup and like just crush it real quick before I got to the next meeting.
What a baby.
You know what that sounds like? My rookie year. Actually, my first 5 years in the league when we didn't have any. You had to bring your lunch. And then we used to all order from Mike Tice's deli, Fill Your Belly Deli in Redmond.
Fill Your Belly.
Yeah, and then we had to pay and all that stuff, and then Norm Johnson would go and get them. They made the kicker go get pick up the sandwiches. And I think Norm got, like, free lunch for the year out of it or something like that. But, yeah, I mean, that's the way it was. It's not that way now, and so maybe that's what he's comparing it to. The other thing about that, though, a lot of the other quotes were all positive.
But, oh, really?
Yeah, okay. that was the one part, though, that he said that. So, yeah, I was like, well, that sounds like my rookie year. The first time, you know, I made the team, which I didn't think I was going to. And our first practice, my rookie year, it was like Tom Catlin, our coach, is like, well, all right, you got like 10 minutes and then we'll meet back in here. And I guess that was lunch time and I didn't bring anything. So, yeah, I went hungry that day. But
it just,
I was okay.
You know, they're the winningest franchise in pro sports history, maybe besides the Yankees. And to complain about how they've achieved that just seemed ridiculous to me.
Yeah, and it seems like everybody else is used to it and everything. But it is kind of funny. You remember Moneyball when David Justice comes and like, hey, why do I have to pay for the pop here?
Yeah.
Why do I got to pay for a Coke?
Exactly. Yeah.
Some franchises are kind of cheap that way.
You mentioning Mike Tice. That is one of the most remarkable job changes. He goes from being tight end for the Seahawks, then he starts the Fill Your Belly Deli. Then he was a big horse racing guy.
Yeah.
Long Acres closed, and he started running bus tours to Yakima Meadows. And the next thing I know, he's the Vikings coach.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
I got to listen to this song. Don't answer.
Someone gets excited.
I have no idea.
I think Sean didn't like my boasting that I was going to get the next one. He picked a song that he knew I wouldn't get.
You guys don't know this one.
What?
You don't know this?
I don't.
Wait. I've never heard this song in my life.
All right. Audio Slave. Audio Slave.
Oh, for crying out loud. What are you doing?
Do we need a tiebreaker?
No, Dave won.
Oh, did he get it?
Yeah.
No. He's 2-1 going into this.
Oh, great. Good for you, Dave.
Thanks, Sean.
Please keep score. All right, Dave, thanks for coming by. You can hear Dave Wyman every afternoon on our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. Thanks for the visit. Dave's mic on. It's in you.
He left. He's out of here.
Oh, this has left the building. And the Big Lead of Two is coming up next.